Want to lose up to 15% of your body weight? Fridays helps you achieve lasting weight loss. We combine GLP-1 medication with nutritional coaching, mental health support, and fitness plans tailored just for you. All included in one monthly price. At Fridays, one price. Every month, all doses and everything is included. Getting started is simple. Take our quiz and get connected with a provider to start your journey. Fridays is certified by LegitScript, so you know the medications are produced safely by accredited pharmacies. Check us out on Trustpilot with over 1,000 five-star reviews. Don't wait. Save $100 off any plan when you start your weight loss journey today. Visit joinfridays.com and use code Fridays100. That's joinfridays.com, code Fridays100. joinfridays.com, code Fridays100. Medications will only be prescribed by licensed clinician if deemed medically appropriate after a thorough consultation. Results are not guaranteed and may vary by individual. Compounded products are not FDA approved or evaluated by the FDA for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Please visit our website for important drug safety information.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Dama and I are partners. She appreciates me, trusts me.
Trust comes from being honest, saying when there's a lie.
You don't know her like I do. When I fled the sanctuary, found a little boat, set sail for Hrvatska, my homeland. I, of course, could not have foreseen the storm. They sent me crashing into Manhattan's shoreline. I was alone, an island within an island. Until one day, I was searching through an old theater. I collapsed. But when I awoke, I was on a sofa, under a blanket. I will never forget this. On the table next to me, there was a plate of kriki-kiki-riki, brittle candy. Yes, she is cruel sometimes, I know. But it is all in the service of bringing out our potential. One thing I know she sees is you perhaps gone a bit soft. I told her, the old nigger, and he's still in there. You just need to get your hands a little bloody, is all.
Hey, Zed Heads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Ben.
And I'm Alex.
And this is The Cast of Us, episode 647.
And this episode, we're covering The Walking Dead, Dead City, season 2, episode 3. Why did the mainlanders cross the river?
You know what's so funny is the moment I heard the title of the episode, I was like, this has to be a Negan joke. Like, it has to be.
I assumed it was a Negan joke. It would have to be a Negan joke, and it did not disappoint.
It turns out we were right.
Of course we were right. We know our man. We know our guy, but we're not starting with this episode, Ben, are we?
No, we are not. We are going to go back and talk about a little feedback from episode 2, which was just another shitty decision.
I got to ask, have you heard any react? Is this the first time in House Podcastica that a rewatch podcast has started with the feedback from the previous episode? And if so, how has the reaction to that experience been?
I think we've definitely broken the format for this particular show. I know for a fact, because we are on The Cast of Us along with everything else that The Cast of Us has done. They've never done this on The Cast of Us before. Okay. I don't know if they've done it on any other podcasts outside of this one. We are definitely shaking things up with our coverage of Dead City. But, and again, I want to preface that the only reason we're doing it is because...
You're the busiest man in America right now.
Well, because of The Last of Us is also being covered at the same time. And they have a whole feedback episode that they do. So I don't want to do Dead City or Last of Us, Dead City, feedback for The Last of Us, feedback for Dead City. And then because I am already busy enough. Plus, Amen. Nothing against anybody who leaves feedback, but we just haven't been getting enough feedback on Dead City to merit doing a separate episode.
Absolutely. 100%. And honestly, I don't think I love this show. I love this universe. I don't think that Dead City is the same level as The Last of Us. And therefore, I don't think this show, as much as I adore it and enjoy it, I don't necessarily think it warrants its own feedback episode. I think we're good with doing it the way we're doing it, and I love shaking up the format. This is cool.
Yeah, look, when Jason asked me last year or however long ago it was, 2 years ago, whatever, when he asked me, like, do you want to cover Dead City, I knew full well I was taking on a show that was going to be very polarizing and probably wasn't going to get the same listenership that The Walking Dead or The Walking Dead replays are getting. And you know what? I was fine with that. I love the podcast. I love the show. I like being a part of Podcastica. Those are the only three things that matter to me. So I'm appreciative of everybody who is listening to our coverage of this and is giving their input. And you coming on as a co-host for this one as well. So that's all that matters to me. If people who are listening are enjoying what we're saying, I'm happy.
I'm loving it. I am having an absolute blast. And with that, let's hear what the folks are saying. Is it me first this week or you first?
Why don't you start things off?
All right. Well, this week, first up, we have Christy Bassman. When the Dama had the violin player play, I have forgotten his name, sadly. Victor the violinist. That was the longest and most tense piece of Bach I have ever sat through. I knew, like Negan did, that she was going to kill him by the end of it. She kept circling him with that pen in her hand. It made me squirmy. He was a smart, nice guy, and I had a feeling he wouldn't be long for this world because of it, and I hate her for killing him. Also, I got a shout-out on the Lost Pod episode, and how cool was that? Don't get bit. Heart emoji.
I love when people comment on their don't get bits or their shout-outs. It's great.
Heck yeah. If you're engaged with and engaging, come tell us. That's amazing.
Yeah, for sure. Next one comes from Becky Anderson, who will actually be joining us as a special co-host next episode.
Nice.
So, Becky, if you're hearing this, it would be interesting for you to leave feedback for episode 3 because you will be on to read your own feedback.
I would love to know how you respond to yourself after episode 4 drops.
But she has left us feedback and she says, I am loving how JDM is playing Negan this season. It's all over his face that he does not want to be the Negan of the past and everything he has to do is painful for him. I hated watching the violin player die. Dama is evil. I'm honestly bummed the lieutenant survived again. Me too. Amen. Again, I love the actor, but I'm not enjoying this character at all. Interesting discovery Maggie made when she noticed the blue bandage at the tire fire and that same bandage Herschel was using. Did he start the fire? And if so, was it to signal the Dama they were coming?
I think we litigated that last answer last week. We believe that was her piecing together. Yes, Herschel's the mole.
Yeah. I still stand firm to that. It hasn't been come out and been revealed.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that's the case.
For sure. For sure. And you know what? I want to comment on one of the things she said earlier, which was I love how JDM is playing Negan this season, which I couldn't agree more. I think he's doing a phenomenal job. But I had told you, Ben, before we started watching that Kara and I were listening to the podcast today. I was getting her caught up. She supports me, but tangentially. No, I'm kidding. She's the best. But no, we were listening to the feedback episode and I heard what Jason was saying. And one thing that really stuck me this time when I heard what Jason said, Jason Cabassi said, was JDM is so seemingly obsessed with the idea of Negan being a good guy that that's the only way he's willing to play it. And man, these last couple of episodes, I have noticed that he really is playing super good guy. And I don't think that's as complex as it could be, but I can see exactly what, like what Jason was putting down. I'm picking up now. I'm seeing what he was alluding to in real time.
Okay. That's fair. I have more to say after this episode, exciting, when we get into episode three about my feelings, because I've been saying for the past two episodes, I feel like this is a facade that Negan is putting on. But we'll get to that. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay, fair enough. All right, next up we have Lisa Edmondson-Walker. She says, for some reason, I'm just not enjoying this season yet. The mustache-twirling villains, the predictable and pointlessly cruel murder of the violinist by the Dama, New Babylon leaders bullying Maggie for trying to tell them they are sailing into a trap. It's just not feeling very nuanced to me yet. I love the actors, but I feel like many of them aren't really getting to act like three-dimensional characters. I'm glad more people are enjoying it, and I will keep giving it a chance. Lisa, I have to say, I hear exactly what you're saying, and I think the reason why I am more allowing it to be what it is because I have accepted it's going to be campy, and it's going to – you're going to leave some reality at the door, and I've just kind of accepted, like, all right, this is just the Negan and Maggie story in year 14 of the ZA. And you're right, there is some really questionable decision making, some character fleshing outs. I mean, we'll get into it more this episode, but I agree more care could be done with the telling of the people in the story, but I love that you're sticking with it. I don't know, Ben, I was rambling.
Same. No, you're totally fine, because I absolutely see where Lisa's coming from as well. And I think that kind of changes a little bit this week. I think for at least one or two characters, we do get them a little bit more, as Lisa said, three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. They don't seem as flat this episode. You know, we feel like we get a little bit more, Pearly being one of them. But again, we'll go into that when we start breaking down the episode. But thank you, Lisa, for even bringing that to our attention. I love it. Dre Manoni is next. Listening to the feedback on episode one ahead of episode two coverage and heard your confusion on my feedback. Thank you for clearing this up, Dre. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
I am all caught up, watched season one live, and I'm still watching season two. So I'm hanging with you guys because I have a hard time stopping in the middle of a story.
We are also completionists, so respect.
Yep, absolutely. You have no idea how big of a completionist I am.
Chuck, man, I can't help but finish Chuck, even though every time it makes me angry.
I get it. Are you on a first watch of Chuck?
No, I'm on like a 19th watch of Chuck.
Okay. You just have to finish the current watch that you're on.
Correct. Got it. It's The Wire, which you don't understand, but trust me, by season five, I'm ready to start season one again.
Got it. Okay. She continues on, the Dama character is so freaking scary. I guess it's not about muscle, but about scaring people with what you are capable of. The violin player's instant death was awful. As much as I have mixed feelings about Negan and his ability to be redeemed, I felt bad for him in this episode. He is between a rock and a hard place, especially since he knows Herschel is in the city now. It's, again, it goes to my point that I've been saying that Dre says that about having the mixed feelings about Negan and his ability to be redeemed.
Yep.
I feel like that potential is there, and we're working towards that. It's just a matter of, is it going to be nuanced? Is it going to be detailed? Or is it going to be flat hero complex like you kind of see it with JDM and the way he's playing it?
I am worried that's where we're headed. I want more nuance. I do not want him to just be straight up a hero Negan. I want him to be that complex character and that thing that we love the most. I want him to get a moment where he gets a little bit of bloodlust and he leans a little bit in and he wants to play that. And I want to see him struggle with keeping the beast inside when the beast wants to come out. I think JDM's got it in him, and I hope that he will allow the character to mature that way. But like, man, Jason really got in my head with the idea that JDM only wants Negan to be a hero, and I feel like that's the least compelling possible opportunity for this character.
I am going to shake that out of you this episode with again, not to get ahead of ourselves, but I have notes on this episode.
This is the hard thing about feedback.
It is to not want to go into it. But hopefully with something that we're going to talk about for episode 3 that might shake you a little bit, because I do see a little bit of nuance in this episode.
Okay.
So we'll see.
I'm excited. Next up, Robin Springer, one of the MVPs of the comments section, she says, the first 15 minutes or so, except for the violin playing, seemed like very bad acting and very boring. It picked up after a while, but I have thoughts and questions. Why is Maggie always out of breath? Why was Herschel disassociating and staring into space while they were locked up on the boat? Did the general actually think that they would approach the island unseen with all those lights on the boat blazing? What did Maggie realize about Herschel when he was bandaging that woman's leg? I was disappointed to see the lieutenant woman made it. Amen, sister. They're going to have to go a long way to make her interesting. Why are the Dama's eyes lit to look like Rasputin? Is the Croat's loyalty to her starting to crack? At first, I thought the Dama would cut the violin's fingers off, which would have been great. That's a great call. But then it was obvious she would kill him. The violinist, with his hat, beard, and costume, looked like he got lost looking for Fiddler on the Roof and ended up on the wrong soundstage. They did a really good job making us care about him, though. That's it, I guess. Still hanging in there.
All right, let's very quickly take out these questions.
All right.
So, first question. Why is Maggie always out of breath? No idea. Running.
There's no cars, man. Like, gas is very limited. Like, we've heard the ethanol. So she always has to run to get from point A to point B. I get that. That's why.
Zombieland, rule number one, cardio.
Yep. Herschel disassociating, staring into space. That was just the Kubrick stare of him like, well, this is a crazy situation I got myself into this week.
I think it's a little bit more than that, though. I think it's also like this is kind of like the brainwashing playing into effect as well.
He's fighting it, but accepting it. It's cognitive dissonance personified. Well,
and I think we kind of talked a little bit about it last week too. It's kind of the guilt of knowing that he was supposed to do one thing, but now what he did is leading his mother back into the city, which he did not want. So it's really a conflict of interest and conflict of guilt within Herschel at that moment.
Love it. Did the general actually think they would approach the island unseen? No, the general did not think. That is kind of what the general does do.
Okay. When you said no, I was like, where are you going with this?
The general did not think.
And I'm like, no, that's accurate. The general did not think. The general thought for some odd reason they would be able to approach this island. Lights blaring, motor running, all of that fun stuff. But you know, the general got what they deserved, and
here we are.
They are now floating in the Hudson in multiple pieces.
It's the way it had to be. All right, next up. All right, why did Maggie realize about Herschel when he was bandaging that woman's leg? We talked about it. He was the one that set the signal fire because of the blue bandage. I was disappointed to see the lieutenant woman made it. They're going to have to go a long way to make her interesting. Not a question, but I'd just like to point out I couldn't agree with you more.
Yep.
Next up, why are the Dama's eyes lit to look like Rasputin? I don't know, but have you been listening to my other podcast, the Quit Jason podcast? I just made a Rasputin joke the other week. What are the odds we're both going to make a Rasputin joke in the same 7-day stretch? It's crazy. Next question. Is the Croat's loyalty to the Dama starting to crack? I don't think so, but I think he is weary of Negan, and he's playing 3D chess. She's playing it better. That's where I'm with it.
Again, it's tough to not jump ahead.
Yes.
I have a theory on the Croat for this episode, too.
I'm excited to hear that because I don't know what I want to say, but I'm so intrigued to hear. And this is the beauty of listening to podcasts about TV shows that you love, is when you're unsure about something, you can hear from other people that also watched it with a reflective eye and kind of like what their take on it was. Because I can't read the Croat right now, and I kind of need a grown-up to tell me what's going on. So that's you tonight, Ben.
All right. Fair enough. But thank you, Robin, for all of that.
It was awesome.
Next up, Deborah Omer. She says, hi, Ben and Alex. I can't believe some people are still being down and harsh on Maggie. Sure, I've had my problems with her in the past, but especially with this season, she seems to be doing what she can for her community and for Herschel. I like seeing in this episode how after she got past being angry and worried, she softened up to Herschel, and he finally was able to break through his PTSD. That's not what that moment was, but we'll talk about it. We kind of talked about it already. Deborah. They worked together to help save themselves and others. The new Babylon leaders made me so mad. Maggie was right with them being blind to what they're trying to do, and it cost them. Pearly was not having enough backbone to stand up against the governor, and it took losing the battle for him to speak up. The Croat had a good battle plan against them. This was reminiscent of when Negan was on Alpha's side with the attack on Hilltop. But this time, it was all fun and games for him until he saw Herschel and Maggie. I just hate that Victor was collateral damage. The Dama is ruthless. Y'all have a good one and take care. So let's quickly go back to I like seeing in this episode how after she got past being angry and worried, she softened up to Herschel and he finally was able to break through his PTSD. They worked together to help save themselves and others. We see that situation is very differently. This is Maggie fearing for what Herschel is being. She's pulling him close and embracing him because he is her son. But she saw that bandage and she knows what Herschel did.
Real quick, we're talking about the moment towards pretty much the end of the episode where they have their conversation right before they go into Central Park, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So this is all after the boat situation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
This is after they're all back on the mainland and they're trying to figure out what their next step is going to be, because there's that moment where Herschel and Maggie hug. Deborah, if I'm wrong about this and this is not the moment you're talking about, I apologize, but by what she was describing, this is the first thing that came to my mind.
And I would imagine that's the same thing. And to me, that was actually the most unsettling moment for me, because that was, I think, seeing through to Herschel and past the Dama's puppet. And this week we got more Dama's puppet. Like you said it last week. Logan Kim's a damn fine actor. Holy shit!
That
the
moment
layers he brings.
That moment to me is like a mother and son hugging right after the mother just found out that her son is a murderer.
Yep.
You know, like
it's one of those, like it's that kiss of death in The Godfather. Like she knows exactly what she's dealing with now, and it's terrifying her, but it is what it is. And she has to move forward with it, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, exactly. And the only other note in Deborah's feedback that I want to make mention of is the Croat had a good paddle blend against him. This was reminiscent of when Negan was on Alpha's side with the attack on Hilltop, but this time it was all fun and games for him until he saw Herschel and Maggie. I kind of disagree with that too. I don't think any of this has ever been fun and games for Negan. He's putting on a good front and being what they want him to be, but that moment of seeing Herschel made him realize the dangerous game that is.
I almost want to run that back in real time, because I feel like what you said was Negan wasn't enjoying it, but he snapped to it when he saw Herschel. I think, and I'm going to agree with Deborah a little bit.
Okay, that's fair.
And this is where you and I are going to diverge this entire season. I love that about this is I saw Negan kind of enjoying the explosions a little bit, kind of enjoying the mayhem and the power that he had in his hands when he was launching those methane-filled Zeds. And I thought when he saw Herschel, it snapped him out of that. That's when he got – hell yeah, sorry, watching the Phil's game. That's when he got out of it and was like, okay, like I can't go down that path. Like I thought that was the realization moment when he saw Herschel. I thought he was enjoying it up until
then. Okay, I can see that argument, especially considering the fact that New Babylon is after him. They want to persecute him and kill him.
Screw New Babylon.
So
in his mind,
when he thought it was a boat full of New Babylonians, yeah, okay, he was probably enjoying it a little bit, because these are people that are chasing him to try and kill him. But I still, he was definitely pulled out of it when he saw Herschel.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So I'm excited to see as we go where we go.
Yeah. Because she says this time it was all fun and games for him until he saw Herschel and Maggie. He never actually does see Maggie. He only sees Herschel.
True. Yeah. Well, I thought I saw Maggie when they did that shot through the telescope. I'll have to rewatch that. Either way, neither here nor there. I think it's a fascinating thing to track and something that I'm excited to see what happens from there.
Okay, that's fair.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/andysgirls or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andysgirls.
Next up, we have an email from, I'm going to try and pronounce your name correctly. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but Tamara Gravenal. Hey, Ben and Alex. I'm powering through with this show because the showrunners have the hard job of coming up with new crazy stuff to entertain us. I'm not fully sold on the story, but I'm so into the concreted zombies being knife-proof, bulletproof, and how they come up with a solution for that solid problem. My biggest point is about the use of art in this franchise. We have seen it as the only constant to the time before. If it's stealing or saving priceless works or creating their own out of rubbish and painting over old canvases, we have seen representations of art being an outlet in all TWD shows, I am pretty sure. That's a great point. As the violin plays, everyone seems mesmerized and distracted. I knew something was underlying there and such a waste of talent to make a point. I found this all a little too much of a Titanic throwback with people rushing to the stern and slipping all over the place. I mean, we even had someone throwing up. Had to be a guy doing it because if you know, you know. It couldn't have been a seasick female. I have a feeling this is going to get better and we will be hooked. Or it could turn into mush with concrete walkers guarding the concrete jungle. Here's hoping for greatness. Tam from Perth.
So, Tam, I'm confused. You have an issue with it being a guy that was throwing up over the side of the boat and not a female?
So if it was a female, we would all assume that she was pregnant. Because in the rules of Hollywood, if a female throws up, it means she is pregnant. See also The Last of Us.
You know,
I'm just saying, like, I definitely understand what Tam's saying. Like, of course it had to be a guy because if it was a female, people would be too stupid to realize, not too stupid, I'm sorry, too ignorant to realize that people can just throw up with it not being related to child rearing.
All right.
What I'm going with, at least.
If that's Tam, the truth, right. If that's not what Tam meant, you made a really good case for what they said, and I'm all for it.
I'm here for storytelling.
Because it makes sense.
Absolutely.
So, it's definitely some crazy stuff, and I'm looking forward to, like, more artwork was brought up this episode.
It really was. And so, Tam, I will say that the artwork through and through is fascinating, because you're right. In the Daryl, the first season that I did see, that underground thing was trading in art antiquities. And it amazes me that even in a post-apocalyptic zombie world, art has a currency, and art is always a theoretical concept. It has the level of value that the people in the community ascribe to it. So seeing that it still matters and it's still a piece that is talked about in this afterworld is fascinating. It's really cool to see that art survives, you know, in whatever way that looks like.
Well, I mean, you look at modern times today, even pre-apocalyptic is probably what I meant to say.
I don't know. I've seen the news. It's It's apocalyptic.
But I mean, you look at the world now and artwork is just the same way. Like you said, it is preserved. It is saved in some ways. It is kind of used as a currency because museums are kind of trading art pieces for different exhibits and things like that. So yeah, you're right. It's nice to know that even in these post-apocalyptic times or zombie apocalypse times, artwork, that's something that doesn't change. I'm sure a lot of it was lost.
Yep.
Or has gone missing. But the fact that what was found is still preserved and used, like they're not just throwing it on a bonfire for warmth. Like they know what they have.
Right. It's the monumentsman argument. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
All right. That leads us to our final piece of feedback. And that, of course, is a voicemail from our friend Steve Brown.
Hello, the cast of us. This is Steve, and this is going to be for TWD DC Season 2, Episode 2. Oh, yeah, previously on. So the Croat has some sort of mole or something in the other people's – what are they called? This looks like a lot of people and vehicles for a recon mission. They're just leaving Negan's cell door open now. I don't know classical music well enough to know the difference between all these different composers, but the guy played the violin really well. Another crappy lesson. He just said the title of the episode, Mic Drop. Excuse me, it's an exploratory mission, not a recon. Oh, Negan didn't even kill that walker with Lucille, too. That looks like a really ugly painting to me, and they keep showing it. I must have missed something in that conversation with Negan, the Dama, and the Croat. How are they going to blow up the ship? Oh, and Herschel arrives with these burning tires. What is the point of this? Oh, someone's doing a single to the Croat with these burning tires. Okay, the closed caption just reminded me. New Babylon, that's what these people are called. Oh, and the Major just threatened Herschel, and Maddie gave her a pop in the mouth. This just doesn't make sense to me. This exploratory mission really looks like an invasion. Oh, it's some sort of mines in the water? What was she going to have Herschel do with the sharp end of that pipe? But okay, here's Jenny with a hacksaw. Oh, now they're launching bombs at him. Oh, and Negan can see Herschel and Maggie get into the lifeboat. Did he see Jenny with them also? Or I'm not sure who all got into the lifeboat before this last bomb hit the boat. And of course, our main characters survive to make it to land, but now they got walkers coming on them. Oh, but the Croat got Benjamin, the drawing kid. Oh, and she just slit his throat. Oh, he played so well too. Well, somebody found the handcuff keys at least. Oh, are they going to go to Central Park? Is that where they're going to hide out in with all the walkers? All right, on to next week.
So Steve just did confirm that Mahershal and Maggie can be seen.
Cool.
Getting that off the boat. So
that's where the live Steving, much like replay review in both NFL and MLB, is so crucial to us enjoying the show. I also want to really applaud Steve for asking the question that I meant to ask last week and I haven't asked yet, which is, what the hell was Maggie trying to get Herschel to do with that pipe? I mean, that thing was a good 5 feet. Like, did she want Herschel with his arms handcuffed behind his back to somehow shimmy up over the pole and pull his arms over the... I didn't understand what her goal was there. So, Steve, thank you so much for saying something.
I thought it was to pry the pipe off.
Like pull it down
yeah.
with strength and then slide the cuffs off.
Yeah, to slide okay. the cuffs right, that makes over.
Sense. That makes sense. But yeah, it did the whole time. And because he had that Kubrick stare and he was just frozen, he didn't do anything, you know, all that. But that was just wild. That was just, yeah, love Steve. Thank yeah. you.
It's always great whenever we get that from, we get the live Steving from Steve.
I mean, that's a fact.
All right.
We did it.
So thank you to everybody who left us feedback for last week's episode. But I think it's time. Let's dive into this week's episode.
Let's do it.
I think it's my turn to read the plot
turn,
summary.
Senor.
So The Walking Dead, Dead City, Season 2, Episode 3. Why did the mainlanders cross the river? In this episode, Maggie and her group venture into Central Park, encountering a mysterious and secluded community that reveres Mother Nature. As they navigate this new environment, Herschel becomes separated from the group and forms a bond with a silent teenage girl named Joan. Not always silent, but silent at first. Meanwhile, Negan, under the watchful eye of the Croat, attempts to protect Herschel without drawing attention. Flashbacks reveal Herschel's past interactions with the Dama, shedding light on his complex feelings towards his mother and Negan. The episode culminates in a tense confrontation, leaving the fate of the city hanging in the balance.
It's a good recap of all the things that happened in those 42 minutes, Ben.
So where do we want to start with this one?
I'm going to start by saying, up until this week, I have been able to spread every recap down between a Maggie storyline and a Negan storyline. But the Maggie storyline filled up 2 pages of notes, and the Negan storyline filled up half a page of notes. So I think it is safe to say this is the first predominantly Maggie or Negan episode of the season. The rest have been pretty split and pretty even. This is the first one that really lent its hand to one or the other, and it was very Maggie oriented. So having said that, where do you want to start?
So we get throughout this episode, we get 3 different flashbacks, and they're all of the Dama and Herschel.
Yes.
So why don't we knock those out? Because I feel like there is a lot to break. There's quite a bit to break down in there these flashbacks. Starting with the first one, we get Herschel, who is
just
held prisoner. He's captured. He's held prisoner. And we get the Dama come in, telling the story of the peanut brittle with her own version of it, and says, I'm going to work to get you a bed so that you're comfortable. Do you need anything else? And Herschel's like, a coat. It's, oh yeah, it's cold. She is doing this motherly thing to make Herschel as comfortable as possible. This is the initial, I'm reeling him in. I need to make him feel like I'm not as dangerous as I actually am.
It's a level of grooming. And, you know, to what
grooming ends, is the word. Yeah.
It, to what ends, we will see, but it is 100% a level of grooming. Now, why Herschel? We'll get into that later. But I did think that whole exchange was fascinating. She was clearly trying to show him that, you know, she had the gentle hand and like, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry you got wrapped all into this, blah, 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 blah. But I want to ask you, Ben Beck, in that moment when Herschel asks for a paper and a pencil, if the Dama were to ask you, what can I get you? What would you say?
A gun.
Oh, shit. Okay. Going straight there.
That's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, you have to assume at this point, because of the world that you're living in, there's no power. Even though they do have power, Herschel just doesn't know it. In that world, you can't ask for a television and movies because...
Correct.
I would want something to read.
That's amazing. I was going to say I would want a book.
Yeah, like, give me a book.
The Douglas Adams Compendium. Okay? Give me like the Bible. I don't know, that's 72 books in one. Like, give me something with some volumetric integrity and I'll be good. Like a coat and a book, I'll be fine. I'm amazed that you said give me something to read, because that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, give me the Iliad.
Just the fact that you said like the Douglas Adams collection, like you pretty much named one of a few on a short list of books that I could read, finish the last page, and just go right back to the beginning and start reading again.
One of the greatest compendiums of the modern era, period. Yeah. You can take your Shakespeare's. I'll take Douglas Adams and the Diner at the End of the Universe. Thank you.
There are 3 collections of books that I own that I can read front to back and have multiple times. The first one is Douglas Adams. Hitchhiker's Guide, Restaurant at the End of the Universe, Mostly Harmless. Thank you for all the fish. I have read all of the Sherlock Holmes books.
Nice.
And I have also read L'Art d'Arthur, which is the story of King Arthur.
Nice. I got
L'Amour really d'Arthur, sorry.
Okay, I got really far in the Merlin of it all, but no, mine would be Nick Hornby, Ben Mezrick, and Chuck Palahniuk. Those are my big 3.
But yeah, I mean, if I was given that choice, it wouldn't be paper and something to draw with. I'd want a book. I'd need something to read.
I love that. So, all right. So she's tempted him with the peanut brittle. That's flashback 1. Mm-hmm. And then what flashback 2 was. So when the Dama leaves, she leaves a crack in the door. And we all know exactly what that means. That means that a test of loyalty and a test of perseverance and a test of possibility is about to happen with young Herschel.
Well, that is the third flashback.
Is that the third one? So which one's the second one?
The second one is where the Dama comes in and she starts talking about the relationship between mothers and sons and also brings up her favorite artist.
Okay.
This is where, and it's the second and third flashbacks that I have a strong prediction as to who the Dama is.
Okay.
Because we talked about this a little bit last week, that she knew Bach by ear when Victor was playing Bach, and she knew different types of music. So she is absolutely somebody who is cultured. But she starts talking to Hirsch about her favorite artist, and I apologize, I did not write what the artist was or do any research into it.
It's on the tip of my tongue, but I'm not going to remember it.
But then she goes into the relationship between mothers and sons, talking about getting more kind of pulling Hirschel away from Maggie in those moments. But to jump forward to that third flashback with that test of loyalty, there is that crack in the door in which Hirschel takes advantage of, and he goes exploring, and he is attacked by walkers.
Sure is.
Walkers that I am 100% convinced she released on Hirschel to see how he would react.
Of course, this was all just a test. I mean, it's the most common cat and mouse situation. So she releases the walkers. He gets through a few of them, but then he gets overwhelmed, and then she saves the day and comes to the rescue. To take that maternal aspect while... And I guess we're just going to get into it, but like, here's what I realized the second time that when I just watched the episode. But what the Dama is doing essentially is showing Hirschel that she would rather rebuild the new world than try to bring back the old world. And I think Maggie has spent her entire life trying to get Hirschel and her into a semblance of the old world. And that is not what Hirschel is interested in. That's why he is drowning in the lights of the Dama, because she is showing him like, no, this new world is gorgeous and we can make it even better. And that's what he buys into. Not Maggie's way of let's stay protected. Let's stay safe in what we know.
Well, Hirschel is an artist. We know that already. He's an artist. And artists are people who are able to see through what is right in front of them and see past it, to see what, to find the beauty in things that are broken. And you're absolutely right. You nailed that. That is what the Dama is using to get through to Hirschel. Like, she takes him up, she builds him a bedroom in a warehouse, in a storage elevator.
Awesome.
Which is super amazing.
Cool. So I wanted to ask you that. Is that cool or is that weird? I think it's cool.
It's cool if he has control of the room to be able to go back down.
Great call.
If he doesn't, it's a cell.
That's weird then. Yeah, no, for sure.
Even if you have a view. But she's using that because we know a little bit of time has passed at this point.
Yep.
Hirschel gave her the seed she needed when he requested the paper and something to draw with.
For sure.
She now has the seed to plant in Hirschel. And she uses that. She starts talking about her favorite artist. And then she gives him a view to see the city and points him in a direction of how she plays into that whole finding beauty from broken, using the city as the canvas. And at that point, she's in. Like, she's broken through Hirschel's defenses.
Let me ask you a question. And Kara asked me this, and I did not have a good answer. So I hope you do. And this is where I say, like, honestly, in all my podcast worlds, where, like, Podcastica is the only one covering this show, like, The Ringer. Hello, Joanna Robinson, where are you at? But anyways, my question is, why Hirschel? What does the Dama see in Hirschel that makes him such an enticing and is it his ability to, I don't know, what is it about Hirschel that she finds willing to risk the biscuit for?
So it's interesting that you bring that up, because I kind of question that too. And I think, in all honesty, I don't think we have an answer to that yet.
Okay. I love that. I love that answer.
And the reason why is season one setup was all about how Herschel was taken and pulled into the city and, you know, taken into New York. And then she needed to get Negan's help to go in and save him.
Yep.
Do we know, was Herschel targeted, or was, did he just happen to be somebody that the Croat grabbed and brought into the city? I think we need to know, we need to distinguish if Herschel was taken on purpose or if he's just an accidental captive.
So was his specialness a happy accident or always in the cards? I'm guessing, I would have to guess. You know what it makes me think of? And you're either going to love this or hate this. It makes me think of Walt.
Oh, no.
And that's that, like, okay. So what's all right, man. Like, what's the Walt of Herschel? I don't know. Like, so to those who don't know, I'm making a reference to Lost and Walt. That unfortunately aged out of his character's usefulness. And it's just like, what about Herschel makes him so, because I haven't seen it. And I'd love to know what the Dama saw, because I haven't.
Well, and here's the other thing to consider too, when it comes to that scenario of why Herschel. Mm-hmm. We're only seeing Herschel. There's nothing that says she's not attempting this with other people that we're just not seeing. Okay. And Herschel is just one of the ones that she is able to crack and able to break in. She might be trying this with multiple people at the same time, and we're just not seeing it.
Do you believe that, or are you just saying that?
No, I honestly believe that.
Okay, you think there might be other Herschels under her care, or at least in the history of the Dama, there might have been other Herschels before?
So,
was the Croat a Herschel?
Yes, thank you.
There it is.
So when I said I had an interesting theory about the Croat, that was exactly what I was going to get at.
Awesome.
The Croat was Herschel before Herschel. When he tells that story to Negan about how he was rescued and she fed him what that food, that that Croatian food that he loved, that was the seed that got the Croat. The Croat is Herschel before Herschel.
Fantastic. I did not put that together amazingly until this conversation, but you're absolutely right. By the Croat telling Negan the playbook and Herschel's experience reinforcing it, it shows that her lieutenants, she brings all of them in the same way. Nicely done. Well,
Herschel is not the first person she has done this to.
No, she is not. She's, I guess you could say she's trying to do that with Negan. Probably.
Well, because think about this too, in form of the Croat, is think about the stories that we heard about the Croat and how crazy he was, so much so that Negan didn't even want him in the sanctuary. Like, they tried putting a bullet in his head and it's what grazed his ear. Somebody that nuts, how can this woman be in charge of him if she didn't, to a degree, break him?
Son of a bitch. That's great. That's fantastic. And and to then watch her do it to Herschel, and like every step of the way you see it and you're like, oh man, buddy.
But the difference between the Croat and Herschel is that the Croat had nobody to bring him out of it.
That's a great point.
Herschel's got Maggie.
You know what's funny? Okay. So I told myself for a hot second I wasn't going to litigate this, but here we are. Last season, when the Croat was telling his story about his family being, you know, he went out on a scavenging mission, he came back and he found that his family was food for another family. The general consensus was that his family was eaten by cannibals. I have always believed that he meant his family was eaten by Zeds.
That's what I would think.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I just wanted to clear that out on the record. There's no reason for me to care about that, but I needed to say it just to get it off my chest.
So I want to go back to the flashbacks again real quick.
Okay.
Because I want to talk a little bit about my theory, my furthering theory as to who the Dama is.
Please enlighten.
There is a, as we know in television, not just The Walking Dead, but any show, anytime a show shows you something that seems totally inconsequential, it never is.
Correct. The Chekhov's gun phenomenon.
Exactly. There is a moment when the Dama is giving Herschel the tour of the theater. And she is talking about this theater and what this building used to be. And she stops and she examines a star on a door of a dressing room. I believe the Dama is a stage actress.
That tracks.
Who probably performed at this theater. It is her comfort zone because she is familiar with this theater. It is why she stays in this theater. This was her world before the world went to hell. She is an actress.
Okay. So she's Catherine O'Hare.
I would even say Catherine Hepburn.
Ooh, Aubrey Plaza. I just given her... her propensity for murder. I just, you know, I want to give her a little edge, but I think that's a great call. And I would not be surprised if you're 100% correct, because they have definitely dropped enough clues and enough hints that could be it.
I think this is a bold prediction too, but I think the reveal, because remember we had Benjamin say that she looks familiar.
Yes. Yes.
So it means that if she was a stage actress, she was most likely on promotional material, like a poster or something like that. Okay. Theaters oftentimes have pictures, framed pictures of the shows that perform at that theater.
Okay.
I think before this season is over, someone is going to find one of those posters and we're going to get a reveal to who she was.
Let me ask you a question. Is the musical slash play she is in, is it real or made up in the Walking Dead universe? And if it's real, what is it?
That's a good question. I did not consider.
Who would she be playing on Broadway, the Dama?
It has to be a dramatic role.
For sure. Something from like, but what's a good meaty? Is it Les Mis?
It could be. Okay. I don't know. I think it's probably going to be something they make up for the sake of
that
television.
True. That makes a lot of sense. She's not going to be Sandy in Greece.
Yeah. That would be so funny.
That would be fantastic.
She's Audrey from Little Shop of Horrors.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it.
Shyamalama? No, can't.
All right. Is there anything else from the Herschel flashbacks that you wanted to touch upon, that you wanted to address?
I think that's pretty much it. I talked about his room being an elevator,
which is super cool. I would love that. That's so really neato burrito. I mean, just open your door and oh my God, I'm overlooking Central Park. Yes, please.
Right? Yeah.
100%.
No, I think that's pretty much all I had for the flashback elements of this episode.
I'm pretty sure that's all I got. It was a really heavy Maggie episode. I mean, there was Negan, but this was a Maggie and New Babylon kind of journey this week.
You're right. It was very little Negan.
Yes. But which is fine. I'm okay with that.
We got all we needed of Negan this episode.
100%. So do we want to bang Negan out then? Like, let's get the tinies and then get to the bigs? Maybe? I don't know. What are you thinking?
No, we absolutely can. I mean, so I feel like I'm doing all the talking, and I apologize.
No, you're absolutely not. I'm hopping in where I need to.
You are. I have more to my theory of Negan and this being a performance.
Okay.
And I will sum up this theory in one question for this episode.
Please. The thing I loved about last episode was we each asked each other 50 questions, and it was great.
Where's Lucille?
There was no Lucille once in this episode. Son of a bitch.
There was no Lucille in this episode. And when I went back and I rewatched episode 2, there is a moment where Lucille isn't leaning against the chair that Negan is sitting in. It's leaning against the Croat's chair. I have this theory that Lucille doesn't actually belong to Negan. Okay. Lucille is something they put in Negan's hands for the sake of visual presentation.
So he doesn't get to take it with him.
No, he doesn't own Lucille. They give it to him when there are people around to give you the visual. But when no one's around, he doesn't have it.
Interesting.
Because Negan is not Negan.
No, he's not. And that bums me out because I want him to be Negan, but he's not. He's Jeffrey Dean Morgan's Negan, and that's fine. That's very, very interesting. I had not considered once that, no, he did not have Lucille at all. And let me ask you this. Is that because he didn't want to bring it or because the Croat didn't want to give it to him?
I don't even think he had it on him. When they were in the car, I mean, and maybe that's it. Maybe when Negan offered to go into Central Park with the other big dude, he didn't carry it in the park with him simply because they didn't have it. But old Negan carried Lucille everywhere.
You're 100% correct. You're 100% correct. But let's be honest, who had Lucille when Negan was going through his power is power mantra? It was the Croat. So
Negan had Lucille because remember he shocks Christos.
Only once he grabs it from the Croat. The Croat has it while Christos is being disrespectful. Okay. And then Negan gets it from the Croat to prove his point. So I like where your head's at. And I'm wondering, because the Croat and Negan have a very interesting seesaw of dialogue this episode. Mm-hmm. And I am fascinated to know where these two stand, because I think the show wants us to think that the Croat is some bumbling, pumbling, blah, 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 idiot. I think he's playing a level of 3D chess that we don't realize. I don't think he's a simple fool. I think he's good at what he does.
Well, I mean, and you're absolutely right. I mean, in that seesaw of conversation, like you said, before Negan goes into Central Park, there's a conversation that's had, and the Croat tells him, like, you need to get a little, I expected you to have a little blood on your hands.
Yep.
And what happens by the end of this episode? Negan returns to the car. He's got literal blood on his hands. And the Croat looks at him, throws him that rag to wipe off his hands, and says, well, you know, what it is what it is.
So let me ask you this. I just rewatched that episode before we recorded tonight. And my question is, did Negan know he still had blood on his hands? Like, how did he enter that car with blood on his hands? Did he just not give a shit and hop in? Like, how was that even allowed to occur? And how is he playing that? What do you think? What's your interpretation there?
I don't think Negan is in his right mind. And I honestly think he probably entered that car without realizing he had blood on his hands.
That's crazy to me.
I'm going to back up a little bit, still staying with Negan, because we get something this episode that I don't remember if we got it in season one or not. We get the first face-to-face of Negan and Herschel.
No, we did at the exchange. Hey, what's up, kid?
That's right. But
that was such a contained, like, no one's making a move. This is the first out in the wild. I'm so happy you're going there. Go ahead, buddy.
And Herschel, who found the gun in Ginny's bag, has the gun and takes a shot. He took the shot with the implication to shoot Negan.
Yep.
But because he has never done that before, because that guy even said, do you even know how to use, were you even trained in how to use that thing? But I think the most important part of this moment isn't what Herschel does. It's what Negan doesn't.
Which
he doesn't flinch. He doesn't move. He doesn't try to dodge. Negan was ready to take that bullet if it came from Herschel.
Did Herschel want to take that life?
I don't know.
I think
in that moment he did. And like I said, I think because it was Herschel in front of him, knowing what he did, Negan was ready to take that bullet. Only because it was coming from Herschel.
Yes, I agree. And again, that's where I lean into Jason's JDM really needs Negan to be the hero. Like, all right, buddy, you don't need to sacrifice yourself like that. But for me, I really want to know what was in that missed shot. I don't think Herschel doesn't know how to fire a gun. And I can't wait to explore more that relationship between Negan and between Herschel, because Herschel really doesn't care about Negan. And I am moderately convinced that if Herschel were to kill Negan, it would just be so that his mother would stop giving a shit where Negan was.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That's just that fascinates me.
Well, I think that's part of the, I think that's part of why I think he legit meant to shoot Negan. I also think there's another element here though, too, in that Herschel is so out of his element in this moment. I mean, think about it. When that other, I forget whatever the Croats, brothers' names are. I forget at this point.
Oh gosh.
Sorry, listeners. Yep. I forget what they are. But when that guy comes out of the woods and approaches him.
Wayland.
What?
Wayland? The guy that comes out of the woods?
Is that his name?
Yes, Wayland.
Okay.
Yes.
I was thinking about the Baratzi. That's what I was thinking of.
Okay.
Because Wayland is a Baratzi.
Yes.
When Wayland comes out of the woods, Herschel throws that knife at him and fails miserably.
Oh, he deflects it instantly. Instantly.
Yeah. And we saw Herschel throw the knife at the board before he leaves the mainland and have this look on his face of achievement. Herschel's out of his element. He thinks he's better than he is.
Yep.
And that could also come into play with the gunshot too. Maybe he's trained, but he clearly... I think it could be a debate as to whether or not he shot at Negan to hit or he shot at Negan to miss.
No, that's fair. Again, Logan Kim, phenomenal actor. The anguish in his face during that entire standoff with Negan, I do not know how he was playing it. And that is a testament to the actor. Great job. Great job.
But again, I do stand by my point that Negan was ready to take that shot.
I agree with that. I think, there are certain people he will die for. There are certain causes that he will. He tried to in the final season of Walking Dead proper. I keep going back to Jason's comments because it's seared in my head. But there's a lot of hero in Negan right now. And I'm intrigued to see kind of what happens there. So let's talk about Negan and Waylon a little bit.
Okay.
I think that dynamic was interesting. I think the second he said two lines and it was obvious he was going to be an antagonist, you knew he was going to die. This episode, most likely, he had red shirt written all over him. and at least he got a little bit of character development. But number one, when Negan and Waylon get up to the vines in Central Park and they have to walk through, and it's a classic, fantastic Walking Dead moment, walk through the vines, don't get hit. Why aren't you just sprinting through? Why are you slowly walking through the vines? Just sprint on through. That's my advice to Negan.
My advice would be, why are you going through that tunnel at all?
It did seem they could have gone around it rather easily, didn't it?
And not to jump ahead, because this is part of the Maggie storyline, but it's like when Pearlie and Maggie and Lucia and all of them approached the tall grass that they had to cross to get to the lake. I audibly, when I was watching this episode and I saw them and I saw that tall grass, I audibly was like, nope.
Nope. Uh-uh. Hell no.
It screams the raptor scene from Lost World.
Obviously.
Yep.
Obviously. Everyone. But you know what? No, the Lost World came out by then. They have no excuse. No excuse. Yeah.
But no, you're right. Like I guess taking it slow because you just don't know what to expect.
Maybe, but it also just seemed like, hey guys, we're going to give you something and here's your zombie set piece for the week. And I'm going to ask you this, and I've never been critical of the Walking Dead world for this, but...
Oh, you're off to a good start.
I feel like they're kind of phoning it in this season on the Walking Dead Dead City on the zombie makeup, and like it's pretty much a lot of rubber masks, it feels like. And I don't know. I see that, and it's not great. It's not great zombies this year. What do you think? This episode had very lame duck zombies.
So my thoughts on this is, if it takes me out of a scene, I agree with you. Like if I see something that's so startling that it takes me out of it and I can't enjoy it, I agree. nothing has taken me out of any scenes this season.
Good. Okay. All right. Maybe I'm just being hypercritical, which is always possible.
Yeah. So I've been okay. I haven't felt anything. It was like more like so rubber mask that it's taken me out.
Okay.
And I've had trouble concentrating. Like, no, I've still been enjoying the makeup and everything. I mean, look, I'm also saying this as somebody who has shared the stage with Greg Nicotero.
Fair enough.
So I'm a little biased because I love sure. Greg. I've gotten to know Greg over the years, and I'm a little biased. But again, that doesn't mean at any point it means that they've kind of tampered back on quality. To me, nothing has been so startling to me that I've been like, oh, that makeup sucks.
All right, good.
I've still been okay with what they've done.
All right,
and I did not mean to humble brag about knowing Greg Nicotero.
Oh, you absolutely meant it.
I 100% meant to humble brag.
Thankfully for you, I'm okay with it. All right, so let me ask you the Negan Herschel moment where he shot Adam and he had so much anger in his face. I was trying to figure out what I was reading there, and like, what is that dynamic? Because I can't quite get a read. Herschel says he doesn't care about Negan. But then in that moment, there was true hatred and true pain, but he also didn't point it at Negan. So what do you think is going on there?
As far as you mean in that scene where Negan kills Waylon and then is standing in front of Herschel?
Yes, yes.
There's clearly a conflict here because, I mean, again, I go back to my whole thing about how Negan just stood there while Herschel had the gun, didn't try and talk him down, didn't try anything. He was ready to take that bullet for Herschel because Negan feels he deserves it after what he's put, you know, Negan through, or what he's put Herschel through. But at the same time, I think there might be a little bit of a conflict too, because without Negan, Herschel is dead. Like,
oh, easily. Yes.
Negan saved his life. Yep. In that moment. Yep. So maybe that's something that is just in his head that he's just conflicted with. Because when we get further in that moment, when Herschel confronts Maggie about Negan, when he says to Maggie, like, no, Negan saved me. Like, somebody came in and saved me. It was Negan. And then seeing Maggie's reaction, he kind of goes off on her. Like, I've had enough of, like, and he never finishes the thought. But if I were to finish Herschel's thought in that moment, because he says, like, you were always talking about Negan so much so, and then he never finishes the thought. My thing would be so much so that I can't even form my own opinion about Negan.
Okay.
It's being forced on him how to feel about Negan, because that's how Maggie feels.
That's fascinating. That is fascinating. And the one thing that really makes me disappointed with this season, and I think this is a perfect way to segue into the Maggie storyline, is just, I don't know. I feel like she's spiraling. I feel like she's not as in control and as much of a leader as I've seen from her before. And I feel like they're playing an angle of Maggie that doesn't do the character a whole lot of service. I want more out of her. Maggie as a leader is so much more interesting and captivating than Maggie as a begrudging soldier. So at what point is she going to take the reins of New Babylon? Because we know that's going to happen. It's what happens in Rick's groups. They join you and then they take you over. It's science. So when is Maggie going to take over New Babylon? And what's the, because this passive aggressive, like this submissive Maggie is not doing it for me. What do you think? I don't know. I want more. Give me badass Maggie back.
I don't think it's necessarily Maggie being submissive. I see elements of Maggie trying. She's being suppressed.
Yeah.
It's not that she's submissive. It's that she's being suppressed. She's being suppressed by Pearlie. She's being suppressed by Lucia. Pearlie is more willing to give her the rope to go forward and to the momentum to move forward. But even he is kind of like under the watchful eye of Lucia.
For sure.
It's not until this episode when he sees that Lucia is planning, major is planning a coup to like, okay, we're going to go, that he finally steps up because he is in charge of her.
He pulls rank.
And he pulls rank and he's like, no, stand down.
I am going to now ask a question that I'm very curious about that neither of us have the answer to, but I want the listeners to also wonder, what is the current governmental structure of New Babylon? Now that the governor has died, is there a president? Is it Pearly at the top? Is it Pearly at the gates? I don't know. I couldn't help myself. It was just there.
It was there.
So yeah. if that's the case and Pearly is the highest ranking official in New Babylon, then there is hope for change. But to all of our Handmaid's Tales fans, if there's a Josh Charles out there, if there's a super governor that's going to come in and I'd like to know more about the power structure of New Babylon, because Navarez, homie's crazy. And
so crazy.
Actually showing a little bit of testicular fortitude. So like, we'll see what happens there. But Navarez is fucking crazy. I also find it fantastic that you call her by her first name. I call her by her last name. But we're talking about Lucia Navarez. It's the same person, folks. Lucia and Navarez, same person. But yeah, she's nuts and I cannot stand her. And that's the point.
Well, I mean, and here's the other point too, talking about that in how, you know, they survived this boat explosion. They lost 50 people on the way there. So they're down to maybe 20 at the most. They lose a couple more through the woods getting to these nature people who we'll discuss as well. And she wants to go off and she's still stuck on this whole, well, if we get the methane, we'll be happy. First off, how did you expect to get the methane with 70 people?
Buddy, we talked about this last
time. Yeah.
We thought we had litigated this. We thought we had figured out that they were just taking Manhattan. But no, it appears that according to Navarez, the main goal of this mission is, in fact, to take the methane and bring it out of New York, which, again, there are logistical things that I don't understand the plan. And that's what pisses me off the most.
You are so close-minded that you have this objective of getting methane. What do you think? You're going to collect a jar of it and bring it back? Like, how do you expect to get it with the small amount of people that you have left?
I don't understand any of it.
Is there something in the show we're not seeing yet?
I mean, within the scope of this episode, this is Navarez making her big point that, all right, let's grab the nature people and make them part of our army, and then we can get this methane. But again, you and I have discussed this, unfortunately, ad nauseum, and we still don't have an answer. But how are they getting it off of the island? It is methane. You need a tanker for it to be valuable with any legitimacy. How do you expect to get it out? It's a really, really clumsy storytelling, and it's bothering me, and I don't like it. And I expect better from this show.
I mean, we know, because we did talk a little bit about this too. We know that their ultimate plan is to eventually take over New York.
For sure.
But they don't have ethanol to power what they need to be able to do a move like that. So they come into the city, they get the methane, they bring it back, they do what they need to do so that they can come in, take over the city, and then control the methane.
Absolutely.
It's a great plan, except for the first fucking step. How do you get the methane the first time, enough of it that you can even do anything with it?
I know. It's
ridiculous.
When there's a plot hole that big, I cannot excuse it. Well, but
I don't even think it's a plot hole. I think it's a character trait. Is that these? I don't think it's a plot hole at all. I think this is something they set up for these characters to make them as close-minded as they are.
Okay.
So that for these characters, there's only black and white. There are no shades of gray. You give them a goal and they're so dead set on that goal that they will throw everything away stupidly to achieve that goal. I don't think it's a plot hole. I think it's a character trait.
I think that's fair. And I think Navarez is going to get her comeuppance, and I think it's going to be the season. So I want to ask you, Ben, who is delivering the kill shot on Colonel Navarez?
I don't care who it is, as long as she gets blown up in methane.
That's fantastic. Oh, that'd be good if she was trying to take the methane and it blew up on her because she doesn't think things through. That's good.
I think she's so dead set on getting that methane that let the methane be her end.
Yes. You know what, podcastica listeners who are going to leave feedback, here's my challenge for you. I want to know in your comments this week, who is going to deliver the kill shot on Lucia Navarez? And I'd love to know. And when we read the feedback, I will deliver to you who I think it's going to be. But I want to know who's going to give her that kill shot and why.
If it's a person, I have a prediction.
Ooh, okay, all right. Let's give it for next week.
Oh, sorry.
No, fantastic. You know, just as you were saying, that's Ben's answer. Maybe after another week, he'll have a different thought.
True.
Tune in next week to find out. I'm teasing it out, Ben. I'm teasing out next episode.
See, I just dove right in.
It's okay.
I was impulsive, like Herschel.
You sure were. You sure were, and that's okay. All right, so aside from that, Maggie World, do you think, I didn't look at the credits that closely, but all of the other new Babylon soldiers, were they just listed as like red shirt number one, red shirt number two, red
probably
shirt number three? Because I've never seen a show telegraph more than this episode, hey, if we're going to show you a character, they're probably dying within the next 7 to 9 seconds, just so you know. It was all over this episode. And it's one way to thin the herd of the new Babylonians, but like, come on, be a little classier with how you telegraph it next time.
We know it's going to come down to Lucia, Pearlie, yes, Maggie, Herschel, Ginny, and Negan.
Like the ones with names and faces. Yes.
Yeah. Everybody else is going to get wiped out.
Yes. Yes. And it's just, I can't get over Navarez. I really can't. I can't get over how simple of a bad guy she is and how just transparently evil she is. And it's just, I don't know. Everyone talks about how great this actor is, and I'm watching this character. I'm not seeing it. What am I missing?
Well, I mean, I think you kind of answered your own question. I think when you have an actor who is so good at their craft, excuse me, that they can make you hate them as much as we hate Lucia.
For sure.
They're doing a damn good job, because this is a character who last episode in season two, I honestly had a thought in my head of, okay, what if something happens and she comes around the same way Pearlie does? And within an episode, I'm like, no, this bitch needs to go.
For sure. For sure. I was proud of Pearlie for pulling rank. So at one point, Navarez was trying to really just take over. We haven't really set up the village people yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
All right. So at one point, Maggie and company find a refuge in which they're able to escape the Zeds of Central Park. And it is these village people led by Roxana. The only reason I know her name is thanks to subtitles. And these folks are their own little community, maybe a pseudo religious base. And it seems that like they've figured out how to live in this world and how to survive and how to coexist. They're willing to offer the new Babylonians shelter until they can get to their next vantage point. At this point, Herschel has gone missing because of a Zed attack in the tall weeds and tall grass of Central Park. And again, we're introduced to a new community inside of this world that we've never seen before. And Ben, what was your immediate takeaway to the Central Parkians?
So it's interesting because we get these little hints about these people before we even get to them. We see one of them. Mm-hmm. Very early on, one of them is watching Herschel.
Yes, second Enid. Yep.
Yes. And then we see one in the tall weeds pull Herschel to safety.
For sure.
And that is Joan, is the one I mentioned in the plot synopsis.
Yep.
But we also get these clues of these people throughout, because we see these walkers that they have to deal with who have holes in little their chest.
Burrows in their chest, for sure.
And we're kind of led, like we're led astray, and we're like, oh, like, okay, who's tearing the hearts out of these walkers? And we get the answers to all of that when we meet these people. And, you know, we find out that they consider the Zeds part of nature.
Right.
They are one with nature. They commune with nature, and Zeds are a part of that. They are who they used to be and who they will become. And in that essence are also their protection. They help them to stay hidden.
Yep.
And anytime in death, they are okay with them becoming Zeds because they get added to that layer of protection.
It's very similar to what we've seen from a bunch of different folks. So the Whisperers had a methodology of kind of helping their own folks transition into members of the herd that they walked with. Like, we've seen folks adopt the zombie culture, the zombie world, as a subculture of their own. And it's always interesting to see how various religions are formed in a zombie apocalypse. I mean, whatever this is, I don't think it's existed before, but it damn sure exists now, whatever it is. And it's funny, Kara was asking me, you know, why are they doing that with her chest? Like, why are they feeding her heart to them? Like, what the hell's going on? And I just looked at her. I was like, that's religion. You know, I'm a 13-year Catholic school survivor. Like, there are things that go into this. And I think it's just fascinating to see how cultures are created inside of this world during a post-apocalyptic event.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny too, is, you know, when it came to removing the heart of the person who passed, and that being part of the ceremony, initially, as I was watching that, there was a part of me that was, oh, okay, so they must believe that if they remove the heart, because I was trying to conceptualize what it was too. If they remove the heart from the person before they turn, it preserves their soul.
Something, yes.
And then in the next scene, we see them feeding the heart to the Zeds. And I'm like, okay, so it's definitely not preserving their soul.
For sure.
Because they're feeding the soul to, if that's the case, then they're feeding the soul to the Zeds. But then something else came to my mind, and I'm like, I don't know why they would do this, because it's not needed, but maybe it's just in their ideology. If you've been a cat owner, and anytime you have a mother cat and you bring in a kitten that does not belong to that mother, you have to do what is a scent transfer. Mm-hmm. Yep. You have to find ways to get that cat, the mother cat, to recognize the scent of the kitten so that it takes it on as its own, because otherwise it's going to reject it. So maybe feeding the heart of the person they just put out there is a scent transfer, even though, again, it's not needed. That Zed's going to walk up and just walk off with the rest of them. Joan's just going to walk off with the rest of them. But maybe to them, that was something they felt they needed to do to add her to the community of Zeds that were out there. They fed a part of her to them so that they accepted her.
You know what, Ben? I have no reason to believe or disagree with you, so I am choosing to believe with you, because that is beautiful. I love that. I really did.
But I mean, and again, like, it adds an element to those characters that if that is the case, and again, we're not saying it is or it isn't because we don't know, but if that is the case, that means that they really do truly believe that these people, that these Zeds are not just literal walking dead.
Right. They're just a member of the ecosystem of the evolution of humanity as time goes on.
And it makes sense for people that revere Mother Nature.
I like that.
This is part of Mother Nature.
I like that a lot. Did you feel like the Zeds in Central Park were kind of like, all right, so to all of you geeks out there like me who have played Final Fantasy, it's like in Final Fantasy VII, okay, when you get to Disc 3, but you go back to Midgar to fight people, and like they're really comically lame and comically super easy to kill. You're like, what are we even doing here? I felt like the Zeds in Central Park were not that threatening at all. They seemed very lame and shambling. What did you think? Did you catch that at all?
I do see them as a threat, but it's only because you're right. They don't seem like they're as quick, and they are just shamblers. But when you consider the fact that you can't see your environment, you can get very easily lost in that environment, like Herschel did before Joan saved him. And you don't know where they're coming from or how many there even are. That in itself was the danger more than the Zeds were. We as viewers knew where they were because we saw overhead shots.
Yep.
They didn't get that.
Okay. You know what?
They didn't seem as dangerous to us because we saw where they were coming from.
Yep. Yep.
They're blind to it as characters.
Oh, God, I would hate that. I would hate that so much.
Yeah, me too.
That would be the worst part.
I'd be dead.
Speaking of the park people, and I don't know if we're ever going to give them a name or not, but
I think they do have a name, and I can't remember what they are. But keep going. I'll look for it as you're talking.
All right. So I feel like, and I'd love your take on it, the park people are very similar, but at the same time, the opposite of the trash people. They are a world of, in a sense, scavengers and hunters that have adapted a new style, a new way of culture, a new way of ritual. And the trash people were very insular in a combative way, but it feels like the park people are very insular in a protective way. And it's just, I don't know. It felt very Jadis and the trash people, but on the other side of that coin. What do you think of that?
I don't know. I don't know if I really have a thought on that. It's
okay.
And I'm not saying that because I'm having a hard time putting the thoughts together, but because we've come across so many different groups of different types of people. Like you've named a bunch already too, that so many. So that like you can mention the trash people and I know exactly who you're talking about,
yep.
But I don't really remember who they were.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
They were a group of folks that made up their own simplified language, like Kevin Malone on The Office when he said,
because that was where we got, what's her name, was one of the...
Jadis/Ann.
Jadis, yes.
Yes.
Jadis was the trash people. I mean, I can see a lot of similarity between the trash people and the Bugazi, which is what the Croat names the nature people.
Yep.
I don't know what Bugazi means. If it was referred to by the Croat, then it is probably a Croatian word.
I would imagine.
I don't know. But, I mean, I can see a little bit of similarity between the two because they are two groups, from what I remember of the trash people, they are two groups who pretty much lived in worlds that were self-contained.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. That's yes, 100% yes.
Yeah. The trash people lived in a world that was just surrounded by trash that kept them contained. They went out when they needed to, and that was about it.
Yep.
These people, the Bugazi, are also the same way, except unlike the trash people who lived inside a wall of trash, these people actually live inside a wall of Zeds.
Sure did. Sure did. Made it work.
Yep.
I appreciate that.
I hope that answered your question. I'm sorry.
I don't know what my question even was, so we're good.
All right. Okay.
What else do you have for the Maggie storyline this week?
You know what? I was going through my notes as we were talking, and in all honesty, I have everything crossed off.
Nice. I've got a couple more notes, I suppose.
Let's do it.
All right. So number one, Pearly, horrible negotiator. I would not buy the new Babylon that he was selling. It sounded awful. Really happy that Maggie pointed out just how terrible his sales pitch was and that he was just telling them all the ways that they will be subservient to New Babylon in the future. Like,
but
what the hell is he doing?
But it's funny to see who bought Pearly's, which was Lucia.
She sure did. She
bought right into it.
Thanks so much, man, for sticking up for the union, blah, blah, blah. All right, lady, whatever. But yeah,
moving on.
That made me laugh. Maggie, when she approached Herschel and knew Enid, she's like, I thought I heard a gunshot. Like, okay, Maggie, if it wasn't a gunshot in the post-apocalyptic zombie apocalypse of Central Park, what the fuck else did you think you heard if it wasn't a gunshot? So that was just me being a little nitpicky at that moment.
Hey, they have cars. It could have been a backfire.
Sure. It could have been a backfire. Let's go with that. Let's go with that. All right. And I guess the last thing I had to think was, so New Enid did not get bit. All she got was stabbed through, I'm guessing, the femoral artery. Ben, I think you were an EMT. I don't know enough. Was she going to bleed out? Like,
yes, she was going to bleed out.
So they did have to kill her. There was no tourniquet they were going to be able to do. There was nothing they could do to stop her from losing her life.
And I don't even think it was
they had it.
I don't even think it was they had to kill her. I think she died.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. Because that was my question. Like that felt like, damn, forced. But then I watched it the second time. I'm like, all right, that seems like that femoral artery they're always talking about John Wick movies. So, okay.
Yeah, it was a bad wound. She was not going to survive that without immediate, like, I mean, before she even got taken back to, I have it written down, but Cafe at the Lake,
yeah,
which was their home.
Such a beautiful name.
But, and I think it was more when she turned Pearly down using the first aid kit to survive, that goes against their mantra of letting nature take its course. They're so in tune to nature that nature has to take its course. They can't do anything against that. So if she was wounded to the point of death, bandaging her up and trying to save her is going against nature's course.
Nope. I love that. I love that. That's fantastic.
So they said their goodbyes to her, and then once she passed, that was when they took out her heart.
Hated the moaning, totally understood it. Again, 13-year Catholic school survivor. I've been a part of plenty of rituals that don't make much sense. On the rewatch, had to kind of fast forward through the moaning. It was just too much for me. That's totally fair. But that's all I had for the Maggie storyline. I guess that's all I had for the episode. It was a good setting up more to come episode, and they've done nothing to make me not want to continue watching.
Hey, look, we're not even halfway through the season yet. So, I mean, there's still
true.
I mean, we will be after next week.
Sure.
But yeah, there's still a long way to go. And I don't know. I thought I seen something that it was renewed for season 3 already. I could be wrong.
They would be silly not to at this point.
I'm trying to, I can't spell, and that's part of the problem. Trying to see if there is a, no, there's nothing yet. So, but again, I mean, there's still plenty of time. Look how long it took to get us season 2. It took us a little bit of time to get season 2. So, you know, it is what it is. We'll see if it gets renewed for season 3. I have a feeling they already have the story to be told.
I think so. And again, the thing that gives me the most hope, and I guess this is also where a part of me was frustrated with this episode, is I do not want this to be Maggie versus Herschel versus Negan. I am not interested in that storyline. I'm interested in the battle for New York City. I'm interested in what's happening in New York. Like, the Maggie Herschel Negan thing is the thing I'm the least excited about or interested in what happens next. Like, give me the other weirdos in New York. Give me the New Babylon War. I don't know. What did you think about coming back into this? Oh, okay, Herschel's mad at Maggie for being obsessed with Negan and blah, blah, blah. What did you think of that this week?
It's more of that teenage angst that we talked about last week. You know, because Ginny's going through it and Herschel's going through it. And I feel like they've already set it up, so they have to give us closure on it. And you can't just all of a sudden say, okay, it's done. I forgive you. It is what it is. There has to be more to it. We have to find out how Maggie's going to release the Dama's grip on Herschel. She knows it's there now. It's just a matter of what is she going to do to shake him of this? So as much as it could be annoying, we have to watch it play out at this point. I think this season is unfortunately going to be a lot of Negan versus Maggie versus Herschel. And actually, I won't even go as far as Negan versus Maggie, because I don't think either one of them is really against the other.
They're on the same side, which is, oh my God, we're surrounded by absolute idiots. How the hell do we keep the world from not burning to the ground? Like, they are both just henpecked, like, oh God, I'm surrounded by morons.
I think this season is basically by the end going to come down to saving Herschel.
Yep. I like that. A lot.
They'll end up working together to do it. Negan will do it in his way now that he's already in with the Dama and the Croat. Maggie will do it in hers by focusing more on Herschel's end of it. And then into the third season that we get, it will be more of a battle for New York situation.
I think you are 100% onto something, and I am very excited to see what happens next week.
Me as well, and I'm excited for what we're going to get. For the rest of the season.
Me too. I think that's all I got as far as my notes go. I'm spent. That was a great episode. I enjoyed the episode. I thought that it got the job done, and it's what I want from this show. It's building on its own lore. It's building its own world. I like it.
Yeah, me too. All right, that's our show, episode 647. Thank you for everybody for listening.
Next episode is Feedback for The Last of Us, Season 2, Episode 6, The Price.
And I will not spoil anything because, Alex, I know you are not caught up.
I am not.
All I will say is, because I was actually on the episode for that, I might be on the Feedback episode. It depends on when Jason records it. My favorite episode of the season. Episode 6 of The Last of Us.
Can't wait to watch. Cannot wait to watch.
It's so, season's so good. And we're wrapping up because next episode is the finale.
Son of a gun. This was the penultimate. Son of a gun. Of course.
Only six episodes this season.
That's wild. Was it more last season? Was it 8?
I think it was 7.
Okay.
Last season. Okay. Could be wrong.
Wow. 6 is short. Sure.
Yeah.
How British of them.
If you want to write in or leave us a voice message about this episode, you can find all of our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, please check out our other podcasts. You've got The Murder Magnets following Poker Face, Strange Indeed following you, and of course, The Handmaid's Tale podcast. Folks, there's only 2 episodes left. It's the perfect time to binge and get caught up.
I will say, Jason actually asked me to make mention of this as well, is that don't forget that once the Dead City coverage and the Last of Us coverage is finished, they're going to be going back into their revisit of The Walking Dead, in which Alex and I will both be on 2 separate episodes. We're going to leave what episodes we're going to be on as a little bit of a mystery, but if you're following us covering this show, you can probably figure out what episodes we're going to be on.
It's the one where Sam Beckett plays the Man of La Mancha. Wait, oh, no, wait, that's Quantum Leap. Never mind, sorry.
I think it's the one where they almost get off the island.
It might be that, but then they turn the dial and then it goes to a different spot. I got you.
Oh, no, so I was thinking that Gilligan screws it up.
Oh,
that's the one I was
different
thinking.
Different islands. I like that. That's the first ever I'd watch.
I keep forgetting to bring this up as well, but if you don't already, make sure you go out and check out the Patreon for Podcastica as well. Patreon.com/JasonGabassi. Sign up for that. And if you can, it is great. You get ad-free versions of all the podcasts. You get to join us on group discussions, be part of a group on Facebook where we all converse and kind of talk about everything. We do game nights and all this other kind of cool stuff. It's a lot of fun to be a part of the group. And so podcastica.com/JasonCabassi is where you can check that out and link to it in the show notes. Did you, before we wrap this up, thinking about what we put in the show notes from last week, did you watch The Verses with Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Lauren Cohen?
I absolutely did. Kara and I watched it the following night because I knew how much she would enjoy it. And that was a great, great episode of First Week Peace. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun seeing the two of them. And I hope everybody out there got the chance to check it out as well.
Yes, highly recommend it. If you like these two knuckleheads, check it out. It's good
time. Right. All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Don't get bit. Chandler Gaines.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com MGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.